Yo, what up? This is the Orbit Spaceman Show, episode 86 in this beast. We made this, motherfucker. We're here, bro. We are in this junk, yo. Like, I'm excited. I'm pretty excited. I got Tommy Oler on this episode. This dude is amazing. This dude is a stage killer. He crushes the mic at comedy every time he gets on the fucking mic. This dude's an amazing screenwriter and just an all-around cool-ass dude, man. He's a good guy. He's one of my good friends in comedy. I'm going to start this show off with a comedy bit with Tommy Oler, and then we're going to get the show rolling. So here we go. Strap them boots. Or whatever they say. I don't know what that means, but it sounds cool. Maybe it didn't sound as cool when I said it. But whatever. Anyway, here we go.
Yeah, you guys remember AOL, right? When pedophilia was just the regular, it was whenever we were kids trying to get f***ed by adults, remember that? That was the internet back then. We were like, man, I hope this 30-year-old will give me some f***ing. Oh, yeah.
Alright, what's up everybody? Like I said, this is season 5, and I've got Tommy Oler on the show.
Hello.
How's it going, man?
It's good, it's good.
Cool, yeah. Man.
I just got off work, that's why I'm so pissed.
Hey, I mean, work, you know, we all got to make it, you know what I mean? What type of work do you do?
Let's see, I'm a manager of visual arts. I help a team. Make stuff. That's what I do. I got a team of people under me and I help them make stuff that they need to make for the company I work for.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
That's what's up, dude. Nice. That kind of leads into, I guess, the bigger picture of stuff that you do on the side, I guess, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah. Yeah, so, my TikTok.
Yeah. So speaking of which, you know what I mean? You're blowing up on the TikTok, man.
I have one video that's doing pretty well right now, actually. So, yeah, that's pretty nice.
Cool. I like, do you have like a...
You're in it.
Am I? Really?
I think your voice is. Yeah. It's the one where you ask me like what I'm listening to.
Okay.
And it's, right. So nice. You can hear you in the background.
Okay. Yeah. All right, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, because actually I've seen you've been doing a lot of those.
I like them.
Yeah.
I like doing those.
I do too, because like you did that one where I think it's like John is on there. But the funniest thing too is the fact that he is holding two phones.
Yeah.
So I think that's hilarious. And the fact that it's like, you, that they're not on speakerphone, but it's like listen to it. So I think that's hilarious. But yeah, that's a cool, like, I guess, like, trend that you started.
You know? Yeah, well, you know, I saw all the, hey, what are you listening to? Like, this college kid asking all these other college kids. And I thought it was so funny. And that they're all, like, real, it's all serious. But it's, like, a fun thing. And I thought it'd be funny just to do. It's stuff no one actually would be listening to. Fake stuff that's just insane. Yeah. And so the one today that I posted was about nut stapling. Like, that's why John's holding two things. He listens to guys getting their nuts stapled together. And before that, it was guys blowing loads, but it speed ups their voices. So they sound like chipmunks, you know, stuff like that. And then I recorded one with you where you asked me what I'm listening to, and I told you I was edging, and I was just listening to the popular moments, the catchy moments in popular songs, but right, I don't let it play out. So that's the one that's going right now, and a lot of people are commenting on that.
Nice.
That spot in particular, because it's like, that's crazy. Who would ever actually do that?
Right, it is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's funny too, is that me myself, is that I also like to do voiceovers for stuff, whatever. So, like, doing the voices of those, like, in those, always is like, oh, that's nice. Oh, that is my voice. Like, or a voice that I'm, you know, portraying or something. Mm-hmm. So, like, that is cool. Definitely appreciate you putting me in that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I always forget to put my phone on silent. But yeah. So, all right. So, one thing I guess we'll get into the big stuff, you know what I mean, is stand-up, right?
Yeah.
So you've been a stand-up comedian for a while.
2013.
Okay.
Yeah.
Damn, that's a while. That's a good minute in there, man.
Yeah, yeah. I started in Knoxville, but I didn't really get serious about it until 2013. But I had done a few spots in like 2008 and 2010 while I was in college.
Yeah.
But that blew. But and plus, I didn't have any time to do anything, and it was at this comedy club called Side Splitters.
Okay.
In Knoxville. And it was the worst. You had to bring five people. They each had to buy. It's a two-item minimum. They each had to buy two items. And then you also had to pay for it. Like, I had to pay $25 to do a five-minute set. Then I had to bring five people. And then everybody had to buy a pizza and a drink.
Total rip.
It was an absolute rip-off.
Yeah.
It was.
That's
but that's like some
Boston comedies.
I didn't know any better though. I really didn't know. I thought, okay, this is what you got to do. Yeah. And I had no money in college, so I only went like, I don't even think a total of five times between 2008 and 2010.
Okay.
So barely none. Man. So and then I got a job in 2010 that I didn't have time for. And in 2013, you know, after a few years of not being able to do any stand up because my job was like at night.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so I'm going to start now for real. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So was that like, was getting through the school part and all that kind of stuff, was that like your inspiration to push further into it? Or what was your big like inspiration to be like, you know what, I'm just going to go full in on stand up basically?
I mean, I knew that I wanted to do something with comedy since sixth grade. Yeah. Like, I made the class laugh once. I was like, I'm going to do this. And I just decided that right up. And then whenever I was in college, I just took journalism because I knew that helps with writing. And I knew that that would be what I wanted to do, like something in comedy anyway. So that was it. That's what I did.
Cool. So did like in doing that. So basically, okay, so I guess my question would be, is when you were coming up basically and you're beginning in comedy, you're doing the journalism and stuff like that, like you said, that helped with writing and everything like that. So were there any like comics or anything like that that you were in, like, you know, I'm going to listen to this comic or like check this comic out more so because of their writing or joke styles or anything like that? Or is there anybody, I guess, that majorly influenced you?
There's a lot of famous comedians that I really love, like Patrice O'Neill, Bill Burr, Bonnie McFarlane. Yeah, Bonnie McFarlane, Gary Gulman, all those people. Todd Barry, who I really like, Louis C.K., Jim Norton, all those people, famous people, I absolutely adore, especially Bonnie McFarlane and Gary Gulman, because they, like, they're geniuses. They're not like Eddie Murphy level, like, come out 22 years old, just, he's just is a genius, just stand-up comedian, like, off the bat,
right,
no help needed, you know. They're not like that. They are geniuses through hard work, like, they write and write and write. And over the course of their entire stand-up comedy careers, they became geniuses just through the effort, you know?
Through the writing and the mics. And
through their writing and through their experience. Like, they just, like, they are pure comedy geniuses and know how to make something funny. Like, you could probably give them some garbage, like literal garbage, and they would find a way to make it funny because they know how to do the work.
Yeah,
you know, and that is inspiring to me. Like, just if you work hard enough, you can become as good or better as some of the best people. Now, they're not like household, like Dave Chappelle names, you know, but
I get what you mean, because like in a sense, when it comes to like a comedy name, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, that's like a comedian's comedian. Kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely get that, you know what I mean? Because there's some comedians that I definitely put to that level, and even though they're not necessarily, like you said, like a household name, you know, that's like they're untouchable almost, because it's like they could be that household name,
yeah,
but what for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think Gary Goldman might be there, but I don't know. He had a special that did really, really well on HBO recently, but Bonnie McFarlane only has like one album, and she's just like a workhorse. Like, she gets hired by like MTV, the Oscars, just to write stuff. You know, that's just how smart she is. And that, I think, is amazing. You know, she's not too big to not do cool things, you know? So I think that's really,
neat. Just the writing is just more her forte. Yeah. Which they always say, I guess, too, that when you get to a certain point in stand up, you either go full stand up or you go the writer way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And there's like, there's an in between, but it's like a thin line.
Almost,
you know what I mean? Yeah. So, I kind of feel like that's the thin line when it comes between like New York comedy and like LA comedy, for instance. You know what I mean? Because like the New York comedy is like, that's a lot of writing. You know what I mean? It's a lot of writing. It's a lot of crowd work, stuff like the two. But you hit the LA side or whatever, and it's like, it's not as much writing, you know what I mean? It's just like, this is more jokes that like they're here, you know, already. You're just kind of working like in the moment kind of stuff or whatever. I definitely have always thought of it in that way, because seeing your stand up and watching your stand up.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
You're good. This is a glass table. So there was no cocaine on here. So I always think that, you know, like I said, writing jokes and the writing process to jokes and stuff like that is a huge thing, and whatnot as well. All right, so a question I have, because you've been doing this over like 10 years and doing stand up.
Yeah, 9.
Yeah, right at it. So, what do you have? What would you say is your key, I guess, to say longevity and sticking with it or whatever? Because you get a lot, I guess you say, like a lot of people go for it and they're like, oh, this ain't going nowhere. And then they're just like,
I mean, see, I personally, I don't think that I'm going to be anything great unless I make it on TikTok, really. stand-up comedy-wise.
Everybody's like, TikTok's got to make it. I got to do it on the TikTok.
Well, you know, my TikTok is blowing up. So that gives me and I've made money on it, through brand deals and stuff. But the thing that keeps me going with stand-up is just because I like it. I like doing it and it's fun. I mean, I wouldn't like, I'm by no means, I don't think I'm one of the better ones in this city. I think there's a lot more talented comedians than me. But I've been around long enough to like see new people that are like born in the year 2000 start doing stand-up. I'm like, holy crap, what in the world? But, because I hosted P&H for a few years, back in the early part of the last decade, like 2014, 15,
you're like,
16.
Your face was like, man, you're like, I really feel old now. Yeah. Like, you hear it and you're like, damn it, dude, like last decade.
Yeah, 14, 15, 16, yeah. And part a little bit is almost 3.5 years, 17. I hosted there for a while, and I saw a lot of people. I saw you start.
Yeah.
Over there while I was hosting. What year did you start?
This will be year 5 for me.
Okay, so like 2016 or something like that.
I think it was. Yeah, I want to say it was either September or November of 2016.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, I was like, even for me still, because, like the other day, going to a mic, and I was like, I saw, these guys start, in the pandemic. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's crazy to be like, you started stand-up in the pandemic. Yeah. It's like, And it's like 2 years later, and it's like they're still going at it, mm-hmm. or whatever, too. And it's like, that's, it's good to see. But, you know, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's wild. I guess comedy is a wild thing. But yeah. as you see, like, I remember when I first started doing comedy, there were comics who had been doing comedy, it seemed probably, like, what, probably 15 years, probably. Or uh-huh. shit. And then it's
you
like
Mo and Nathan and the Klein brothers, you know, they were around long before, you know, I was. I came in and I was like, holy crap, look, these guys really know this city. And now they're all kind of like, you know, gone.
Yeah.
Now it's like us who are the people that are left. We're the old people that they saw. Like, you know, what's her name? I forget her name, but she's got freaking gray hair now. I remember whenever I met her, her hair was like completely brown.
Kate. Yeah. I was about to say that. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, man. I was like,
I was, you know, and I hadn't seen her like do it throughout the whole pandemic. So she must have been like going gray before that and then just let it all come out during the pandemic. So yeah, that was wild. And seeing the new people start and during the pandemic and continue on, they, you know, you really got to like it. You really got to like stand up to keep doing it. And especially during that pandemic, whenever it's like, you know, it's like dangerous to go out.
Right.
You're putting your life on the line. Right. Before the vaccine, you're going out.
It's like everybody's got gloves,
gloves, mask.
Your hoodie all scrunched up.
Yeah, putting a little condom on the mic, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you're putting your life at risk. And so it's like years from now, if they decide to quit, you can, if they're talking to you like one-on-one on this podcast a couple of years from now, and they're like, quit, like you started during when it was deadly to be going out. Right. What's wrong with you now, like, man? Keep going.
Exactly. You know? Like the, I think about that all the time, actually. Yeah. And because it's the especially when you consider like the PNH and like basically for me coming into stand-up, watching stand-up, because I started off as a writer myself, or whatever, just writing just stuff for YouTube and people, you know, doing random stuff like that. And so coming in and remembering when Comedy Tennessee existed, you know what I mean? Over there off of Sycamore View and stuff like that. And then coming up to see like the PNH and how the PNH was like a staple place. You know what I mean? It's like the PNH was almost like the Apollo for stand up here in town. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was the Memphis's version of the Cellar almost. And it was like, you know what I mean? It's like it wasn't that caliber, but it was for a comedian coming up from when I first started, it was like,
You had to be there.
Yeah,
you had to be there.
Yeah.
And I can't, I really can't believe I hosted that. I can't believe I was able to handle that, you know?
But, I mean,
because I moved here. I started in 2013. Excuse me. Oh, gotta get some water.
Are you good?
I got something right in there. Start talking. But I started in 2013 in Knoxville for like a year. Then I moved here in January 2014, and in April, Mike McCarthy gave me the PNH to host.
Okay.
Because, like, politically, the atmosphere, I was, like, the best choice. He didn't want to ruffle any feathers by giving it to anyone else. I was brand new.
Yeah.
I wasn't, like, terrible. And he's like, here, you think you can do this? And I was like, absolutely, yeah, give it to me.
Yeah.
And I was really well liked for a while, you know.
Yeah,
I was really well liked for hosting it for a while because I the one thing I did was I stopped signups at 11 p.m. and that changed the game for a lot of people. Like Mike was like real hard, like you got to get here before 9 to sign up.
Yeah.
But I was like, the show starts at 9. I'm going to stop signing people up at 11 p.m. Sorry, not 11 a.m. 11 p.m. And if you get over here at 11:01, you're not going up. So just make it between 9 and 11 and you'll go up. All right. You got all that time. And that saved me a lot of headaches because a lot of people, you know, Memphis, a lot of people show up late.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way it is.
Right, right.
You know? And just the fact that I did that because, you know, Mike wanted to, like, make sure everybody got there on time. He was in the military. You know? So he had that mindset. But it ruffled a lot of feathers because a lot of people showing up late from, like, work, like working late jobs or showing up in between a break from work or something like that, right. You know? And they would show, be like, can I do some time? And he'd be like, nope. Yeah. And whenever I came in, I was like, yeah, it's 10:30. You can go up. You might go up late, but you can go up if you want. I'm like, okay. So yeah, just doing that, you know, it changed the atmosphere.
Right.
And then, previously when Mike did it, it wasn't as well attended. Now there's any number of reasons why, but I really took to Instagram and Facebook taking pictures of it. And, that's not to say it was Mike's fault because it wasn't well attended. It was just a different time. And so I started taking pictures of the mic and posting it on Instagram and Facebook. And then, I would take like sneaky pictures, like I would get an angle where it looked like there was a lot of people and you know, there'd be like five people at one table. I'd put that one table there in the back, in the foreground. And then in the back would be the person on the mic. So it would look like there's a lot of people. But as soon as that started going around, more and more people started showing up. And the next thing you know, the place was packed every Thursday with a bunch of comics standing around and a bunch of people. And, and it was just a wild and nice atmosphere, you know, like people talking throughout. They'd shut up if you had a good set. It was always a fight.
Right.
You know, it was always a fight. At P&H.
It was. And one of those crazy things too about P&H is a side note is that I've been working on this, basically making this like mini comedy documentary about Memphis, right? And the Memphis stand-up and comedy scene and stuff like that. Simply because I feel like when I first started watching comedy here, I was like, there's so many different styles of comedy here, or whatever. Like you have this guy who might be doing like Def Jam stuff, and then I have like three comics who just complete like deadpan or whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where I have the drunk type of comic or whatever. You know what I mean? And so that was an interesting thing to me. But then when I started actually doing stand up, and I was like, what in the fuck is going on? Do you know what I mean? I had to learn like, I have to follow the drunk comic, or I have to follow the deadpan guy, or, you know what I mean, the Def Jam guy, whatever. And so P&H was one of those places that was like, when soon as you get there, like once you knew you were a comic, it's like you come through the back door, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like only rookies came through the front door kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's like you come through the back door, you see all the comics standing right there in the fucking hallway, smoky as shit in there, and it's like every comic type that you could think of was hitting that stage, you know what I mean? And so, and then the crowd was the same. It was like you never knew what kind of crowd you were going to get on any given Thursday.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. You know what I mean? Whatever it was the one thing it was guaranteed to be was talkative.
Yeah.
Like you might get an angry crowd, that you might get like a crowd that shut up and didn't say a word in between the set or during the set, but in between they're, and then by like 10:30 when everybody had the drinks in them, sometimes it's just a cacophony in there. Like you go up there and just be like, people were talking and yelling. You're like, listen to my jokes, please.
Right.
Please, God.
Right. Like, I swear, man. Like, that place would definitely test your patience as far as going on stage.
Yeah. But it made it, like, whenever you go out of town and do a show, it made those rooms a layup, you know? Because you'd go up at P&H and you'd be giving them, like, stuff that, you know, killed in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Right.
And then you'd come over to P&H and you would just be dying. They wouldn't care, you know?
Right.
And you'd be like, please, hello. And, you know, but the thing is, if it worked at P&H, it would work, like, anywhere.
Right. And, like, and that is the one thing, too, that I've always felt with the P&H more so than any place. But along still with Memphis comedy in general is that Memphis comedy gives you this like real, like Brooklyn, Harlem, New York, like vibe to everything. Whether it's you're in Midtown or you're in the bad part of town or the nice part of town, or whatever, the people always give you what either they feel like you deserve when you're on stage. Yeah. And so like with the P&A is one of those places too, where it's like when you go up there, you're like, bro, I've worked, like in your mind, you're like, this joke is gonna fucking work tonight. You know what I mean? And you go up there and they're just like, fucking shut up. You know what I mean? Or you're like, oh shit, I just so happened to get the PC crowd tonight. Like, and the PC crowds are fucking, they're like, I don't want to hear this shit. And you're like,
you're absolutely right. I mean, you have to earn, their, like, a Memphis crowd, you have to earn their respect every single time you go on stage. Right. It doesn't,
even like, if they've seen you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, so I performed in Nashville at Zany's. Mm-hmm. And I've walked on stage and my setup got a bunch of laughs. Like, I didn't need to earn a thing, you know? I just go up there and I start talking and people are already chuckling because they're ready for it. But like here, it's not like that, you know? I go up and if the crowd is like warm, like one woman is smiling. And I'm like, heck yeah, I can do this, you know? Yeah. Like, I can do it tonight, you know?
Right.
But, and everyone else is just like, all right, let's see what you can do. And it doesn't matter how long you've been doing it. These people have seen me here for freaking years. Yeah. It doesn't mean they like me.
Right.
It doesn't mean they're going to laugh at anything I say. Right. You know, I mean, tonight, are you going to the High Tone tonight?
Yeah.
Tonight, I'm probably going to bomb tonight. You know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to go up there and freaking die. But you know what? I need to do it.
Yeah.
I need to do it. And that's just the way it is here.
Yeah. But I definitely feel like it definitely builds you to be the strongest comic. You know what I mean? Because I have noticed this, like here, like I'll get a run where it's like, bro, like I'm bombed. Like, 6 times in a row, like, what the fuck is going on? And like, you're just like in your shit about it.
Yeah.
And then like, you were like, all right, well, I'm gonna go to Arkansas. I'm gonna, you know what I mean, somewhere, whatever. And you do that same set, and you're like, it kills. And then you get back, do the same set, and you're like, what is it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just that like, a Memphis crowd every time is gonna make you work for it, like you said. But in that being said, I feel like it is a hindrance to us also at the same time. You know what I mean? Simply because when, say, like, you have other bigger name comedians or some shit like that that come through town, simply because we don't have like a name brand, I guess you say, comedy club here. Mm-hmm. Like, we have 2 comedy clubs, but they're not in consideration like a name brand. So it's like, when those big name, you know, famous comics do come through town or whatever, it's, I feel like they kind of are like, Memphis is, it's okay, but it's kind of shitty. You know what I mean? Because like, they just weren't laughing, or they were like, just like talking or whatever. And I think it's not that Memphis doesn't like the comedy. It's just that that's just their way of being like, yay or nay type of thing, you know? Yeah. But yeah, man, that's crazy. So one thing, we got into this big thing about stand up. But we were talking about earlier about you writing and everything like that. So I know that you got some accolades, you know what I mean? You got some accolades for you got an award. For a screenwriter award in 2019. For Animals Can Talk.
Right?
Nice. Which after I saw it, I was funny because I was like, wait a minute, let me look at it. I was like, oh, Tommy sent this to me for me to read this a long time ago. I remember this now. And I was like, that's cool, man.
I think you might have read maybe the first or second draft of it.
Yeah.
So it's really different now, but yeah.
So that's cool, man, that you did get that award.
Yeah, I got a golden nib or something for best sitcom pilot.
Yeah.
It was pretty nice to win that, because I submitted it. I wrote like a bunch of drafts of it and changed a bunch of stuff, and because it's basically just a story like if animals could talk, but they've always been able to talk to us, but they don't talk it with the same level of intelligence as we do. Like, you know, they say a dog is only as smart as like a 5-year-old kid, and if they had a voice that where they spoke like us, they would just talk like that. Yeah. So like, so same with a cat. So they're just basically animals with like
children brains,
and that's what the animals are now, but they can just talk
in
my script. So because I never believed in like a dog being like talking and it's just as intelligent as a grown man or something like that. It wouldn't be, you know, they'd be like, I'm hungry. And please shut up.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Or they'd be like, I love you. You know? And that's basically what that script is. And you know, because.
Okay. All right. So had to stop for a second. We're back. Obviously, you just heard that commercial, but so you should definitely go by and do that cool stuff. But Tommy, you were talking about your the book "Animals Can Talk," right?
The screenplay,
Screenplay, yeah.
Yeah, I was talking about how I make the characters, and I do that, and then the plot comes from that, like what they need to learn and what they need to overcome, and then that's basically how I come up with it. Right. I just basically just slam these characters together and see how they work and mess with each other. And then I make it from there. And then after that, after it's all like figured out and outlined, I just sit with it and I write it. I just write the whole first draft. I like to do it in like a day or 2 days.
Right.
And then from there, let people read it and then leave it alone and then come back and rewrite. Because that first draft is always garbage.
Yeah.
It's always garbage. No matter how much preparation you do, you realize, oh, okay, this actually doesn't work. Because, you know, whenever you're putting like outlining and stuff, you're like, okay, so this character will do this and then that will happen.
Right.
And then once you do that, you realize you've got characters in the room, you know, that you had there. They would definitely do something about that. So now this can't happen. Or if it does happen, it has to happen in a different way. Or you've got to move people around. You've got to do this. You know, a lot of different things happen whenever you actually sat down to write it. And then you put the setting in and you put those characters all in the room.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I got you. That's cool, man, because do you use that same process in writing? Because that's more for like, because you wrote that as a book, right?
A screenplay.
Okay. Yeah. So do you use that same process when you go from the screenplay to adapting it into what you're going to say, put on the film and everything like that too? I know, because working with you on, what was it, the project we worked on together, Boo Phone.
Because
we had to help do the lighting and stuff with Boo Phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I've never asked that question. So is that the process you used to, you say?
Well, it's completely different because I never made Animals Can Talk. I just wrote it. It won a couple of awards, but it never got any like real traction, and it was 30 minutes, you know, it's like a 30 minute sitcom. So that would take, and you know, it's about animals that can literally talk. So I have no actual way to make that, but with something like Boop Phone, that sketch, my writing process is like completely different on a sketch than it is for something like that. So like a sketch, how I do them now, I just basically, I sit down at my computer and I think, okay, I need something today. I mean, because my whole writing process is just about the work of doing it.
Right.
Because I sit down and do something every single day.
Right.
It's not about waiting for inspiration.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about just slamming ideas together in my brain until something makes me laugh, and then I write it down.
Right.
So, like, for Boop Phone, that is strange because I literally did that to my girlfriend at the time. Right. I said, ring, ring, and then I pretended that her phone was a boob.
Right.
And I listened to it, and I talked to her. She rolled her eyes and thought I was stupid. And then about a couple of years later, I was like, oh my gosh, I want to write this down. I think that's funny. So I wrote that down as a sketch, but it was still the same thing. Like, I sat down and I was writing and I was remembering things, you know, things that I thought were funny, or, you know, I'll just write whatever it is. I'll just start, you know, writing, and then something will come that I think is funny. And then I'll just take that and you know, stretch it into a sketch in some way. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, man. So, speaking of sketches and stuff like that, I noticed too that you've done quite a few things. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm a huge IMDb person, so I'm on IMDb all the time.
Yeah.
So of course, I had to look it up. But I know it was a while back, like in 2017. But tell me about the show Don't Disturb Frank.
Don't Disturb?
Yeah.
Oh, or Do Not Disturb.
Yeah, Do Not Disturb, because you played the character.
Frank, yeah, so. I played the character Frank. Yeah. So that was written by, it's got her name on here, right?
Yeah, it was written by, what was her name? It was Ellen Burns.
Ellen Burns, yeah. That's right.
Ellen, the writer was Ellen and Robert Burns.
Yeah, Ellen and her brother Robert wrote that. And, you know, Ellen did stand-up here.
Yeah.
She lives in L.A. now, but she did stand-up in Memphis, and, you know, I was hosting P&H, and she asked me if I wanted to be in her short film.
Yeah.
And I was like, heck yeah, yeah, who am I? And she told me I was Frank. I didn't have I didn't write that at all.
Yeah.
I just acted. I was like a freelance. I was a gun for hire.
Yeah.
So she had me, and I played the manager of the hotel, and they rented out a hotel,
yeah,
the Roadway Inn, like in downtown,
yeah,
and we filmed like for like 2 days over there.
Yeah. Nice.
And I just played the stupid manager, and and a funny story from that was Angela Garoni, who plays one of the main characters. It's basically an episode of Broad City, but set in Memphis. It's like they basically wrote a Broad City spec script and then was like, listen, we want to make this, so we'll just change all the characters' names, blah, 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 blah. And that's what they did. And Angela Garoni, who played one of the main characters, it was like a 3-day shoot. Two of them were at the hotel. That was my 2 days there. And on the second day of the hotel, the night before, on the first day, the first night, a lot of the crew and Angela went out and got drunk. And I think it was Angela's now husband. I think it was his birthday. And she got freaking wasted. So she came back that second day. She was completely hung over. Like we were having to sit in the dark, and like she was supposed to have like pads and all this stuff on her head.
Yeah.
And we're just sitting there waiting, you know, quietly whispering to each other, and she's like asleep and just trying to survive this like 12-hour work day. And obviously whenever they shot, they had to turn off the air.
It's hot as shit.
So, and it's in the middle of summer in Memphis, and we're sitting there burning take after take, and she's hung over, sweating, like gagging from the heat. It's like, oh my gosh, she drank way. It was so funny seeing the whole thing.
That's funny.
But yeah, it was basically the plot was I was the hotel manager. I told them to clean a room. They go to clean a room. They find.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm just imagining like the Memphis scene so much as being like, I'm fucking dying right now. All right.
Yeah, I tell them to clean the room. They go to clean it. They find a dead body played by Ross Turner. And they find a dead body and a bunch of cash. And they just take the cash. They spend it all. But then the person whose money it is comes and tries to find them. And whenever he comes to talk to me, because I'm the manager, he attacks me and I shoot him in self-defense and kill him. And then they're like, "Oop!" And then they just kind of keep the money. And that's the whole thing. But yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So I know we're on IMDb. We've also been talking about too a lot about P&H, stuff like that. So I know P&H led to some other stuff or whatever that was great in the creation of You Look Like
In town. Yeah.
Which I am a very proud person to say I won twice. you know what I mean? But
you won after I stopped hosting, right?
Yeah, I won the one here, and then I went to Arkansas, did that one, and I won that one and came back. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then I never got to go back up to defend my championship. So I just.
That was because of COVID, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
COVID helped me keep my crown. Nice. But, is it?
You'll always have it.
Yeah.
Do you have it here? They let you keep it actually, right?
Yeah. Well, they didn't. The one in Arkansas, they wouldn't let me keep the belt.
Oh, okay.
Or whatever. But I got to keep the hat or whatever that I got on the one here, whatever.
Yeah.
But how did that come about? How did you become like a co-creator of that?
Oh, so back in 2014 and 15, a lot of the comics. Whenever we would be like waiting for something, you know, let's say we're at a show, like there's like four of us on this show. And, you know, as someone's like up on stage or we're like outside waiting to go on, we would play You Look Like just in the green room or all together or outside, you know, and make fun of each other.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. Like, it made me laugh so hard doing that. Like, just the round robin, how quick everyone was.
Yeah.
And and the person who is kind of, like, in charge, not in charge, but, like, who always started the most games was Katrina Coleman. And she always, like, she would just start, like, saying, "You look like," and then whatever. And then everybody else was just kind of, like, go around. It was just like checking, you know, just it all started with You Look Like. And in like May of 2015, me, Katrina, Benny Elbows, and Kyle Kordsmeyer went to Fayetteville, Arkansas to do a set at this place, at this venue. And we're all in outside with the other Arkansas comics, just making fun of each other, doing You Look Like. And I like took some pictures, and then he like hit me while we were doing it. Like, this should be the show.
Yeah.
Like, this is a show. It's so freaking funny, you know?
Right.
And I talked to Katrina like after we got back, and I said, "Let's make this a show. You want to do it?" And, you know, Katrina at the time, she was a great pull for, like, you put her on a show, a lot of people came out to see, you know? So I was thinking in that way, like I would have done it with anyone, but I also wanted her permission to do it. And, but also I knew I wanted her to be on it because I knew people would come to see it if she was on it. So I asked her if she wanted to do it. And she said, "If you can get a venue, then we'll do it." I contacted P&H. I was hosting there, so I knew it'd be easy to get that.
Right.
And I was like, "Can we do something? Do you have any dates filled up?" And they had one for that was 2 weeks away. Like, "You guys can do it on this Saturday, 2 weeks from now." And we had no format. We had nothing. I was like, okay. But I just said yes. I was like, okay, we'll take it, you know, because I knew by in the next 2 weeks we could come up with something.
Right.
So I told Katrina. She was shocked that we did 2 weeks. And then I just booked everyone. I got everyone I could on it. I got I got basically everyone that was in that that group of us doing it, like Doug, Kyle, Benny. Yeah. I got all three of them on it. And then I got like Whitney Wasson, who was in Fayetteville, Arkansas at the time. I asked her to be on it. So she drove and then decided to do it. And then I got two other people, I forget who, but I know that I wanted it to be like as diverse as possible. Like you needed to have like dudes and women, and that like they had to be a good mix. You couldn't just put like six white dudes on the show. It would be awful. You know, they could literally say the same thing back to each other. Yeah. It could work in any way. I was like, no, we need different point of views. The good thing about this, about Memphis, is just how the wide range of people there are.
Right.
So I was like, all right, we're going to get as many different people as we can on every single show. So we booked that. And then me and Katrina met at RP Tracks and hammered out, like in one night, we hammered out the format. And then we did the show, and there was some bumps. Like we decided to do like 7-minute rounds on the first one. And as it was going, we're looking at each other and we're like, this is too long. Yeah. And so the next round, we're like, we're doing only 5-minute rounds.
Yeah, I learned that last year I started my roast battle show last year or whatever, which is the Roast on the Bluff. And so my very first show I did the same thing. I was like, I wanted it to be different from You Look Like, because I had done You Look Like. And I was like, I wanted to be in a different style from that. And so being in California, doing like San Diego comedy stuff out there, the way that they would do theirs is in that same kind of roast battle-ish style of whatever. It's just saying, okay, you both get 6-7 jokes or whatever, and you go back and forth or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'll have the judges decide whatever who wins between that. Whatever. And so like I did the same thing where I was like, man, I had everybody do, I was like, all right, everybody do, you'll do 4 jokes on each other, and then the judges decide, and the show was like fucking 40 minutes, and they was like, all right, everybody, we're done. I'm like, shit. so I didn't have to extend it out in the second show when I did it. But
you figure out a lot when you do the show first time.
Yeah, yeah.
You figure out a lot. So yeah, we did that, and then that first night people came. We didn't fill up P&H, but people came, and they were laughing hysterically, like tears in their eyes. And the thing that worked the best was the notes at the very end. Like we filled up stacks of pieces of paper. Yeah. On each table that said "You Look Like" and then blank. And so it was, and it would be dedicated to someone. So like at the end of the show, I would have a stack of paper that the audience wrote about me. And so would every other comic. And then we'd go up and read what the audience wrote about us. And the audience loved hearing what they wrote. And then sometimes it was so bad, we'd roast the audience for like writing some terrible joke, you know? And that was just, that was a lot of fun. And then, on the second show, it was completely filled up. And then, because we started, the first one was in June, the second one was in July. And then by January 2016, there was so many people in the crowd that I was standing on the edge of the stage, and my feet were like just hanging off the stage a little bit, like an inch. And it was touching someone's knee. Like we were standing on top of people basically just to perform the show because so many people were showing up. And I was like, okay, we have something here. Yeah. This is real. And by May of 2016, Craig Brewer, the director, saw it.
Yeah.
And we got a fast forward a few years. We got a deal to make 10 episodes of it for Gunpowder and Sky. And then we do that. Kevin Hart's company, LOL Network, buys it. And then it comes out in 2019. By that point, I'm no longer hosting the show. And now it's It's happening. The show's in Denver. Yeah. It's in Texas. It's in Atlanta. It's in Alabama. Like, it's all over the place. I do not get any money from that, by the way.
That fucking sucks.
Because it ended because I left the show because me and Katrina didn't get along anymore. Yeah. And I don't care about the money of it whatsoever. I'm just happy that it's doing well and that I've left that whole entire chapter of my life behind.
Yeah.
So just because it didn't.
But your name still is on it, that you were co-creator and everything.
Like yeah. That. I mean, you know that. Yeah. But like the people in Atlanta or Alabama and Nashville and you know I don't know how far people know that, you know. I don't think anyone in Denver knows that I made that, but
I'm gonna ask you this question. So if you ever went to Denver and somebody did know that, mm-hmm. and they would be like, we got Tom Yoli here, we're gonna bring him up also, how would you
be very surprised.
Yeah. Because, but like, besides being surprised, being like, oh shit, like, how did you know that? But like, how would you take that?
I would be flattered. I'd be like, wow, you're a nerd for knowing that somehow. Because like, none of these flyers does it say, Tommy Oler and Katrina Coleman's, you look like. It doesn't say that.
right.
You know, it's it just says you look like. And if you were hosting that show, you wouldn't sit there and tell these comics, now let me tell you the history, this was made by a couple of comics in Memphis. You're not gonna do
right,
you know,
right?
But you would definitely, like, you know, if you googled it, you'd probably seen my name, right? You know, if you googled it,
because technically in the world of stand-up comedians or whatever, that counts as a credit, like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah, that counts as like a because that was LOL Network, so that counts as like, yeah. Like,
yeah.
Like, so yeah, that's, I don't know, I was just thinking about that just now. Actually, I was like, yeah, that does technically count, is it? But mm-hmm. So, yeah. But yeah, I don't know, that's just a question I've always was wondering, you know what I mean?
It's yeah.
Like, because some people, I guess, would look at that and be like, well, yeah, I want to be counted, you know what I mean? Like, oh, if I'm on the flyer, put my name credit or whatever, you know what I mean? Kind of thing.
Yeah, I get
that's
that.
Super humbling for you to be, you know what I mean? Like, like if you knew it, that's cool, but it doesn't.
I get the need for some people, but for me personally, it ended. The relationship between me and Katrina did not end well. So, and she continued to host it after I left. So the more distance I put like from it, the happier I am, you know what I mean? Because I just don't want to keep living in that moment, because you know, still there's, it's, we don't have like a great relationship. So, and a lot of it is because of you know, some people started You Look Likes in other cities because I gave them permission to. I was like, yeah, I don't care, you know, because I really don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care if you do it or not. And they didn't ask her, so she got mad, and then it became a thing, and it came back on me. And I'm like, please just stop bringing me up, because I just want to you know, live my life, and I don't want this to be brought up over and over again. You know what I mean? So that's where I stand at. So that's why I don't care if, you know, my name's on it, because, you know, the more distance that I get, the better I feel, like, having moved on from it, especially having moved on from it so long ago, like in 2017 was, I think December 2016 was the last time I hosted it. So it's been 6 years, you know, since I've hosted that at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man, that is some distance in time. Mm-hmm. So, hell yeah, man. Damn, that's crazy. That's crazy. Like the whole like adventure of how it came about to the adventure of how it ended. and like,
and it's not even, it doesn't even, they don't even do it here in Memphis anymore.
Right. Yeah. Because it's like, because that was after the pandemic, it stopped.
Yeah. Whatever. I mean, but once P&H died, that's my guess. You know, I didn't have anything to do with it or anything like that after 2016. So, you know, I don't fully know why it's not around anymore, but my guess is because the pandemic killed P&H and killed that, you know? So that's that.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's even still speaking too on P&H. I also, as a lot of comics, every time I mention this, some comics, they're like, man, that's fucked up, man. It's fucked up. But I also feel that the death of P&H was and is somewhat of a good thing that happened here in town. Not because of the establishment being anything. It's just, I think as far as comedy goes, it was definitely a good stepping stone for a lot of comics coming up. But it being closed down opened the door for Memphis to expand on what other comedy is here in the city type shit, mm-hmm. or whatever, and make those other places like, well, yeah, we should be going here, you know what I'm saying, instead of all piling in here in one day, you know what I mean, kind of thing.
Yeah, I get that. I understand that point of view.
Yeah.
The problem I have with it is that most of the comics we have in the city suck. Yeah. So whenever we, whenever we expand to a new place, we just put a bunch of garbage up on stage and then they don't like us. Cause
this is true.
You know, honest to God, I think there's probably only like 5 talented people here.
Yeah.
The rest are working their way to talent or, you know, are straight garbage.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that has a lot to do with why places are like, I'll let you do comedy. And then, you know, 7 months later are like, please don't come back.
Yeah.
You guys don't buy anything.
Yeah.
You say awful things to the patrons. And it's, you know, it's because there's like a, you know, we do that as a group. We like are extremely poor and cheap.
Yeah.
We don't buy anything.
Right.
And if we do, it's the cheapest beer.
Right. Like on tap. We're like leaving the bare minimum on the tip.
$1 tip. Yeah. You know? It's just what we do because we have nothing, you know? And then, I mean, I have a good job now, but I'm still guilty of not buying anything because I spent my entire
comedy
life being embarrassingly poor. Yeah. Like I don't drink alcohol at all, you know? That's for a completely different reason, but it helped me save a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because I was like, no, I don't need anything. But now I don't even buy a Coke or anything. I'm just walking in there. I'm like, all right, I'm just here to do comedy. And I'll do my thing and I'll walk out. And I was like, I didn't pay anything for that bar.
Yeah.
And so, you know, now I have more of a responsibility to do that.
Yeah.
I have to do that now. Like, you know, now that I have a job that pays me well, I can actually buy something and help keep this place going.
Right.
Not only will I go up there and say insane things that will probably make people want to leave or puke, that I should probably buy something.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So yeah, there's that aspect of it because, I mean, I remember when Sports Junction, before it became, I forget what it is now, Bear Claw or whatever it is.
Yeah. I think there's something like that.
Yeah.
Cheese Danish or something.
Yeah, yeah. but whenever it was Sports Junction, I remember whenever Mike Hochburns goes up there and performs, none of the comics buy anything. Mike is attacking the audience and the establishment.
Yeah.
And then as he's on stage, the owner of the place goes up to Michael Klein, who's hosting it, and says, this is the last one you guys are doing. We don't want you back after this. He's making fun of everybody. People aren't buying anything. You guys are cheap. And then Michael Klein goes up there and says, that was the end of the show. They don't want us here anymore. And then he drops the mic on the ground and walks outside. And we're like, and freaking one comic who doesn't do it anymore was like, does that mean I'm not going to go up? Like, he didn't even get a chance to go on stage. Like, the show got canceled and ended forever before this guy ever got to go up and perform, you know? And that's what it's like here. Most of the comics here are, and you can say that about everywhere, but the problem is also that audience thing where you have to prove yourself every single time. Now that, if you're a talented comic, that makes you tough and that makes you strong and be able to handle other things out there. But for new comics who don't, you know anything.
Dude, man. So let's talk about saving some money really fast, right? Because obviously, you know, this is a commercial. One thing about this one, let's talk about saving money with car insurance. And I know this sounds like a cliche thing because you hear about this all the time on TV, but just go check these people out. Go check out Jerry, the car insurance saving app, right? It's a cool app. I use it, and it saved me a lot of money, right? On average, the average customer can save like $878 a year using this Jerry app, right? Because they go through and they find all of the insurance people that are going to really save you money and work best for you and, you know, keep you safe and money in your pocket, you know? That's the best thing to do, right? They have a 4.2 on Google, so you know it's legit and you know they're about that business, man. That's why I use them. And of course, you know, here on the Orbit Spaceman Show, we are all about the good stuff, you know? So, you can go to the Jerry app and you can use them. Find them on Google and iOS. You can sign up in like 43 seconds. It doesn't even take that long, right? So, check this out. I'm going to leave you guys a invite down in the bottom to go and get on that. You know what I mean? So, there will be a quick little link in the bio for Jerry Insurance, and you can check that out and get hooked up. You know what I mean? Let's do it, dude. Like, you'll save so much money. So much money. The Jerry app. Insurance. Check it out.
She said for those new comics, you said
For those new comics, like it's a trial by fire, and the audience starts to believe that everyone sucks. Because they already believe, like, okay, you got to prove yourself to me. There's no like leeway given to new people, so you know it creates a quagmire in a way because you get tough audiences, and the tough audiences only create like hardened bad comics, because there's no leeway to their ideas.
Because a lot of times what happens, which I've noticed too a lot, is that the crowd does that, and then a good comic who has a bad set is like, oh, well, fuck, like that was rough. And then like a comic who's half of what that comic was has to go and try to follow that.
Yeah.
And then the crowd's already like, we just ate the good comic alive.
Yeah.
We're about to really kill you. You know what I mean? And then they're like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? And it's like, and it does. It creates this like, it creates this battle-hardened, angry comic. You know what I mean? But not in a good like New York angry way. You're just in this like, it's almost like an anti-comedy kind of thing, but it's like, because nothing is worse than anti-comedy people, but it's like it makes people get to that point almost.
So the bad comics stay bad for longer here.
Yeah.
And the good comics, they get good, but we don't have enough mics to make them insanely good. Like, so you can get good here, but if you want to become like amazing, you got to leave.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. But that's with everything. Music, all that.
You got to leave.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. When you say mics now, do you think that there's a such thing as, do you think a number of mics is a good thing versus quality mics? You know what I mean? Because I feel like there's a such thing as like a quality open mic.
Yeah.
And then there's just being like, well, we have fucking 10 mics, you know what I mean? But they're all shitty mics,
They're all Drew's Place.
Yeah. You know? I mean,
because we, it would be great to have like 10 high tones, 10 PNHs.
Yeah.
We just don't, you know, what we get, you know, I think most of what we have here is like middle of the road, you know, yeah. Some nights are good, some nights are bad, like Lamplighter, you know, you go to Lamplighter, you might get a crowd and you might actually be able to work on something, do something cool, you know, sometimes it's like a 50-50 shot. And then we have like Drew's Place where you go over there and no one's interested, and they're only doing comedy because they've done comedy before.
Yeah.
And it's a nice way to fill the time, but no one cares. No, truly no one cares, and no one has ever cared.
Yeah. Yeah. And not to break you off, but like my issue with that place is that I, my personal self, right, cannot do comedy at a place that will restrict you as a comedian of things that you shouldn't say. So it's like, to me, that's ridiculous. So it's like, you are a, this Drew's Place being the fact that you are a like gay LGBT, you know, establishment or whatever, right? Then you should be even more so open to open speech and freedom and everything of that nature, right? So in that case, like just putting it out there, like me being a black comic and going in, I did a set and they were like, of course I use niggas all the time. So like, then they're like, oh, like don't, you shouldn't say that. It's like, what? Like, but that's just, that's part of my jokes though. Like that's part of how it is. So I feel like a place that is telling you like, oh, you should dial it back a little bit, that is definitely like a hindrance to a comedian or whatever.
Yeah, you know what I mean? When I go there, I know exactly what you're talking about. I go there and I know, like, I know what they want.
Yeah.
So I perform it in that way because I, you know, I see, I'm not trying to like censor myself whenever I go over there. I just understand what that crowd wants to hear. And ultimately, like, I'm trying to provide a good time. So whenever I'm there, I just go up there and just try to have a good time. And I mostly like mess with the crowd and stuff like that. Cause I know I'm not going to say anything stupid, you know?
Right.
But I can't tell any joke I want to tell, you know, because, you know, someone might get mad and talk to me afterwards. So I'm not even going to entertain that idea. Whenever I go to Drew's Place, like for me, it's like a little challenge, you know. I'm like, all right, let's see what I can do here. Right. And mostly I'm there to hang out, and then stand up is like the side thing.
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying, but for me, it's like, all right, let's go do my thing and see what we can pull out tonight. And you know, I like to work different skills depending on the mic or depending on the feeling of the night. So like if everyone's going up there and just telling jokey jokes and it's not working, then I'll go up there. I won't tell any of my jokey jokes. I'll just go up there and maybe just try a little bit of storytelling or just do straight up crowd work.
Right.
Or, you know, if I see that crowd work's not working, you know, whatever, I'm going to try to tailor what I'm going to do to the feeling of the room. And the only positive about Drew's Place is that, you know, the feeling, you know, the temperature right when you walk in.
Yeah.
You don't have to figure it out. You know, you go to High Tone and you have to figure out, okay, what are they going to like tonight? What's this crowd going to like? Yeah. You don't got to do that at Drew's Place. You're just like, all right, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
If you want to work a particular set of skills, like if you're, so let's say you've got a clean comedy show coming up in a month, you better go to Drew's Place every Thursday up until that show,
right?
Because it's gonna, like, it's not that you need to be clean at Drew's Place, but
going there
will make you step back from yourself, like step back from that freedom you normally have at other mics. Because let's, like, if you're performing at a church or something, you've got to treat it just like Drew's Place.
Right.
So that's what that place is good for.
Right.
But the overall, the crowd blows, you know, they're not paying attention, and you get like one guy paying attention because he feels sorry that no one else is paying attention. Yeah. So he's like looking at you, he's trying to give you some energy, but it's always like, whatever, you know, on a good night, you probably have one table listening to you, you know, but if you go up there and you start saying wacky stuff, like everybody's all of a sudden paying attention to you and they're unhappy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's what it's like over there.
That's funny. That's funny. Man. that's crazy. Well, it's definitely been insightful, man.
Yeah.
Hanging out and talking with you. One last thing, too. Mm-hmm. You yourself being a podcast person, right?
Yeah.
You host a podcast.
I did.
I did.
The pandemic killed it.
Oh, no, man. No, bro.
Let's write an episode.
Yeah.
That
was one of my dreams to be on there, but it's cool.
I hosted that podcast. I wrote a script of an episode of TV every month. Mm-hmm. And it was basically like I did that because I wanted to write.
Yeah.
And I just made that podcast so I could watch a bunch of TV and then write episodes of that show I just got done watching, and then I'd invite a bunch of people to perform voices on it and be stuff on there. But whenever COVID happened, you couldn't you couldn't do anything, and so I just like I didn't have to pay anything to put it on there, but I was like, you know what, I think it's time. If COVID is killing all the gatherings, I did this podcast for 2 years. It literally didn't get me anything.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it got me my job before that. Like I put it on my resume and my previous job was like, wow, that's really cool. You did this. We listened to a couple episodes. We really liked the quality of it. And I was like, oh, thanks. And they hired me practically. But other than that, it didn't really do anything for me other than like personal, like writing growth. And then I got to hang out with everybody and let them read the wacky stories that we came up with. So what I would do is I would invite basically you and let's say your girlfriend over, and I'd be like, we're going to write an episode of the Brady Bunch. And beforehand, I would tell you, watch all the episodes of the Brady Bunch you can. And then we would come together and just talk. And then I had a story format, and then we would just follow that format and come up with an entire episode of the show. And then later in the month, I would invite you back because I would have written the episode based on that outline that we came up with. And then we would perform it together. I'd invite other people to do voices. And then sometimes I'd probably have you perform like 5 voices. Yeah. You know? Richard was on a lot of them because I don't know if you know this about Richard Douglas Jones, but he's so good at doing voices.
Yeah.
He can do all kinds of voices. I did an episode of Miami Vice. I had him play like Bill Cosby. Like I literally wrote people that Richard could do impressions into my scripts. Because I'd be like, I know Richard can do an impression of Bill Cosby. I'm going to invite him.
That's funny as hell. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, man, definitely. Well, if you ever decide to bring it back, definitely holler me.
I will.
I'll definitely be in there.
100% will.
but, man, it's been fun having you here on the podcast and everything like that. I know it's like almost 6:30, and for us it's like that 7 o'clock time slot on signing up is like do or die.
Yeah.
So, but definitely before we go, definitely tell everybody, you know, where to find you. I know TikTok famous and all, but
Tommy Oler on TikTok, TommyOler.
All right, but cool. And then you're on Instagram.
Same thing. Same Tommy Oler, yeah.
All right, cool, man. You got any shows or anything like that coming up? Anything sponsors that you want to shout out?
No, I don't have anything. I'm taking a break from shows while I start my new job because I want to make sure I get in on it.
Yeah,
and do good, and not have. I don't want to worry about anything while I'm worrying about this new job. I want to have the mental bandwidth to be able to figure this new place out I start having to write a bunch of stuff and figure out a show.
But cool, man. Yeah. Well, definitely. Next time I have some more comedians and stuff like that on the show, definitely want to have you come back if you're ever interested, man.
Cool.
So, all right, dude.
You made it to the end of the episode. I can't believe that. It's pretty awesome. You're the real MVP, as they say, as that one guy with the bad haircut and the balding situation. What's his name? Kevin Durant? Yeah? That guy. Anyway, thanks for listening to this podcast. This podcast is an amazing podcast. We're listening to it way over here while we're hanging out with koalas and things, you know? It sounds kind of bad and seems kind of out of place, but some people do like to hang out with koalas and listen to this podcast while smoking a J, you know? If that's what you like to do, then definitely keep coming back again. And you can find this podcast on Snapchat and Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all those places that you can find great podcasts like Overcast, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, all those kind of things. And fuck yeah, dude. We'll see you again next time on the next episode. And hopefully this fucking koala will stop taking my goddamn weed.